We're going to continue today with our reading afterwards, but the topic, as I sent you, was why can't we let go? And what is it that keeps us attached to our feelings and our emotions? And this is something that is really interesting for me, because in the process, I've seen a lot of things, concerns, thoughts, feelings that have been coming up that haven't come up in years. And so it's been a personal experience of why can't I let go? What are the things that are being stuck? What are the things that are returning? What are the feelings that are arising that are keeping me stuck in certain ways of thinking, even with all the tools I have? I don't need anybody to say to me, oh, Oren, you know, you've done this, you've done that, you should be able to let go right away. I say it enough to myself. Every moment, every thought, why is this feeling getting stuck? Now, I had a habit when I was teaching martial arts and Chinese medicine that a lot of my colleagues who were instructors were not very happy about. And that was that I was always very honest with my students about my own issues. And the reason my colleagues weren't happy about it, they said, well, you're an instructor. You shouldn't be telling your students about your own issues. You should be the instructor guiding them. And I responded to them that I didn't think there was a contradiction there. I thought, in fact, that we're all on the same path. We're all meeting the same conflicts. We're all human beings. For example, and pardon my, you know, kind of topics, but when we eat, we all need to go to the toilet afterwards. It's not like one of us is going to say, oh, I can eat and boom, I don't need to ever go to the toilet. So we all face the same realities. So my feeling to share my own experiences with my students was to see that even somebody who has spent so much time on these things, we still meet the same problems. We meet the same conflicts. The only difference is, or the only significant factor is how one of us managed to solve them, how we are able to work with them, how we can find resolution with them, how we can find ways to grow from them. So I sent you in the chat box the titles of two very famous Time bestseller books called The Untethered Soul and The Surrender Experiment by Michael A. Singer. Michael A. Singer, it's in the chat box. The first book is his kind of reflections on what life is about, this untethered soul, his conclusions. The second book is a very interesting writing of his whole life, like an autobiography, and how he felt that if we talk about surrendering to the process, to the universe, that's one way we express it, or to reality, and just going with the flow, well, we should really do it. And so he describes how he feels he did that in his life. They're both excellent books, and they both talk a lot about letting go and just going with the flow. Because the question that arises when we read books from people who write wonderful, wonderful, interesting, informative, and very helpful tomes is ultimately, can they be helpful, and from where are they coming from? So in reading The Surrender Experiment, I was very, very impressed and I was very moved. But at the same time, when I found out exactly what it was that provided him with the resources and the space to write the book, and how it's affected the rest of the world and the health and medical practice in this country, I questioned as to whether the book was just mere information or was it really going to contribute to some improvement for somebody. Now, how does that relate to everything we're talking about? Because that seems so far away from Buddha Dharma. It relates in the sense that when the Buddha offered what he offered, and we just went over this in one sutra, it says very clearly he didn't offer it for any purpose except compassion. You recall that when we read that? The Buddha teaches out of compassion only. When he's done with the teaching, he returns to his space to be sitting and live his life. At that time, sitting means the place where he sits and sleeps and eats. There is no desire to spread the word, to teach the truth, to convince people, to tell people how it is, and actually say, well, you have to do this so you'll be happier. It was about he sees suffering, and the suffering he sees, he then wants to help people understand that you can get out of that suffering. But there is no personal interest on his part whatsoever. Is that clear? So the question arises, how do we deal with the information that's presented to us as spiritual teaching from all these different sources? What are the things that I repeat over and over again that, at least from my perspective, I hope that you will grasp through these discourses? Anyone?
The non-attachment.
Those are qualities. But what is it you can, how do you get the unattachment?
By questioning our motives. Questioning our motives.
Questioning our motives. Okay, so what is questioning our motives? What is it we're doing?
What is our purpose? Looking at our purpose.
Okay, what is that? Looking at our purpose. What is that?
Mindfulness.
Okay, what is that? What bag do all these things fill?
Awareness.
That's still another quality, but what is the bag that it all fits into?
Self.
A daily practice. A daily practice. Isn't it interesting? This is a really good example of what we are as human beings. When I ask the question, the first thing that comes to your minds are the qualities, not the actions. This is what we as human beings do. And what I've repeated many times over and over and over is one must have a daily practice and tools to deal with the issues, right? Practical, practical, practical practice. And verifiability, validation, that you can self-validate what you're doing is helping in your life. That is what is so important. The tools of sitting, the tools of questioning, the tools of understanding. So when we say unattachment, it's nice to understand what unattachment is, but what does that mean in daily life? Well, for me, and now it comes in the connection to the sharing of what I'm going through, unattachment means I'm going for surgery tomorrow and fine. I show up for surgery, have the surgery and see what happens. Not sitting here for a whole week and thinking, oh my God, I'm going for surgery tomorrow, and what could happen? And the nervousness and the anxiety I have about, I could die on the table tomorrow, or I could never walk again, or I'm going there to improve a situation, but what if it doesn't improve? The last surgery I had didn't improve the situation in my knee that I had. That was years ago. And interestingly enough, 10 years ago to the month, I had the knee surgery. Interesting coincidence. So there's a little cycle there. So it's not enough to say, well, okay, let's be unattached. Oh, let's be this. Oh, where are my anxieties coming from? They're kind of coming from the origin, right? From 10 years ago, I had an operation. It didn't go well. The origin that, oh, I don't want to, you know, I have pain. I want to have less pain, all those things. And yet I find myself throughout the week, sometimes waking up in the morning, you know, when I wake up early, about 5:30 in the morning, thinking, oh, what's going to happen on that day? Now that day is tomorrow. So the question is, how do we bring these tools to our life? And for me, the answer is breathing, is understanding, looking at the origins of things. And most of all, and most important, in my point of view, is from whatever I'm offering, is why am I clinging to this? Which is what I think Sam just mentioned earlier, or why am I attached to this? That's the topic of today's talk. Why am I attached to this? The daily quote, I don't know how many, I think all of you are signed up to the daily quote. Are you? Yeah, on Telegram. Is from Michael Singer, is from his book, The Untethered Soul. And it says, I think I'll put it into the group chat box here. It's from Michael Singer, as I mentioned. When a problem is disturbing you, it's in the chat box, don't ask what should I do about it. Ask what part of me is being disturbed by this. That is another way of saying, why am I clinging to this? Because there is no subjective true or objective true judgment on anything that's happening. It's only subjective. It's happening. That's the objective truth. Whether we make it good, bad, pleasant, unpleasant, fearful, unfearful, that's a subjective. And that has to do with our own perspective and our own experience and our own way of looking at life. Is that clear? We've talked about the control we have in our lives. And to that effect, the Buddha Dharma, and I'll review, Buddha means awakened one and Dharma means teaching. So Buddha Dharma is not a religion. It's a teaching by a person who has awakened to reality. The teaching of Buddha Dharma is to awaken to what's really happening. And when we're unhappy, when I wake up early in the morning and think nervously what's going to happen on that surgery day, the only thing that's taking place there is part of my mind is attached to some kind of anxiety, which I can trace back to some fear, to some memory, to some attachment. Now, there's no judgment. And this is another reason I'm going to make a little diversion here of why I share all these things with my students and whenever I teach them, because there is no judgment to having them or not having them. That's a very important point. One shouldn't look at a teacher. I look at Michael Singer and I read his book. I don't say, oh, well, because he's a multi-billionaire in Florida, I'm not going to, you know, read his book. There's no judgment in how he's lived his life. But yet all of us have to have criteria. And the criteria the Buddha Dharma offers us is what is really happening here? Why do I feel this? Why am I acting in this way? How can I be in the present moment in such a way that these things do not affect my thinking so that I can think freely? Recognizing that these things do affect our thinking is understanding what's happening. The next step is, how can I be so that they don't affect my thinking? Now, this is nothing new. You can read this in any self-help book. You can read this all around. The question is, can we find real tools that really help us? And that is where we come to the practices, the daily practice, something daily we do to reflect. And from the Buddha Dharma, it's sitting and sitting quietly. So over the last week or 10 days with everything going on, I have to be very honest myself. I've had very little time to do my practice. By the time I finish the evening, I'm very, very tired. And I'm in different strange environments, different rooms, different places, sleeping at different places, and all the emotions, of course, and family. And so I didn't force myself or allow myself to do the sitting as much as I needed to. And so what happens? Anxiety arises, attachments. Things that are there. So I don't look at myself and say, oh, Oren, you failed. Sometimes I actually do, but that's not really a common thing. It's more like, Oren, you're not paying attention. You're not paying attention to the patterns that you know are subjective clouds in the sky and will dissipate if you will just take the time to sit and focus and reflect. And so it's not some miracle or some magic wand or some thing I can buy. It's just a matter of dedicating the time to doing the practice. And we understand from all the teachings, all the discourses we've had, that the practice involves sitting quietly and breathing. The practice involves understanding the nature of reality, understanding dependent origination, and reflecting on that process. And then focusing on the remedies to the negativity or to the attachment that we manifest. So if fear is there from some past experience, what do you think would be a remedy to fear? What do you guys think?
I always say just go for it, because whatever you're afraid of, confront it and plow through it. And that's what's helped me overcome my fears.
So when you sit and you reflect on the fear, what comes up in your mind?
The actual process of doing it. Okay. I think of, you know, I was very afraid of deep waters. And years ago, I decided that I had to learn how to dive. Not because I wanted to dive as a hobby, but because I wanted to overcome that fear. And it worked.
Yeah, okay. It does work. I did the same with needles. Yeah. Same thing. I cured myself out of it. I just went to, I actually walked into a blood donation center. And I said to them, I want to donate my blood. And obviously that is the longest thing you need to deal with a needle, the longest time you need to needle. And apart from acupuncture, but that's a different thing. But I was afraid of that kind of needles. And that, that took my fear away. So you dive into the problem. Yeah, definitely. I do agree.
Okay. Other
although
solutions?
Some fears are healthy fears and, that you shouldn't go towards, I would imagine.
Yes, that is true.
No. Fear can protect us.
Fear can protect us. And sitting and reflecting, even if it's instant reflection at the moment, is to determine, is this a genuine fear or is this an attachment to something? I mean, any fear is an attachment, because the fear of dying is an attachment to life. And from a Buddha Dharma point of view, one at the advanced levels doesn't even have a fear of dying or a fear of pain or a fear of suffering, because all those things are in our head. And that's what our reading shares with us. The one we're doing, the heart perfection, the greatest perfection of the heart wisdom, we'll get to in a little bit. It's trying to tell us that the demons and the devils, at the terms, of course, of 11th century Tibetan Buddhism, are really in our head. And so if we exit quickly in this life or sooner than we expected due to some violent act, well, that's the karmic manifestation and not to cling, to be clear. So that sets up a very interesting conflict with the way we're taught to believe, and also perhaps with biological imperative, because the biological imperative as a living being is to survive. The cells don't want to die, but they have a time if they die, but they are not going to die prematurely. And we, as a large community of cells, many large communities of cells, don't follow that imperative, not to just willingly expire, but to follow the process. So here is this push, and here the Buddha Dharma is saying, well, whether you die or not, it's not really important. That sets up a very interesting juxtaposition. And reflection on that juxtaposition is exactly what the Buddha Dharma wants each practitioner to do, to understand. Why am I afraid to die? Why am I afraid? Let's bring it back to reality, which is another reason why I share my things with my students. Why am I afraid I might not walk well after Monday? Why am I afraid I might die on the table? Why am I afraid that I'm going to have to undergo this procedure? Because sitting and reflecting on that will shine a light into the process of my mind, the process of my living. Asking the questions is what will give you the perspective and the view on reality. Your answers usually will just give you a momentary Polaroid snapshot of where you're at. Let me repeat that. That's a very important thing to realize. Asking the questions will give you an opportunity to reflect and ask what's going on. Answering the question is just like a Polaroid snapshot.